Hey everyone, this is James Baca, known professionally as the Notorious Banker, and welcome to my podcast. 30,000 amazing followers all across social media. We've got 22,000 plus on TikTok at Notorious Banker, at Notorious Banker on Twitter with 3,400, and Instagram / Threads with 4,000 plus amazing followers. I'm the author of High Risk Transaction, the Ryan Coogler Bank of America incident, now available on Amazon. And of course, I'm the soon-to-be published author about a book about New Mexico State University. I'm also really wanting to write a book about the slow journey to bankruptcy, and we're kind of scoping that out. I really hope to get to writing again in the near future. I had a trip to Dallas. Of course, I recorded the last podcast live from Fort Worth, Texas, with the Bank of America news, and that kind of just came and went. You know, Bank of America got fined. I had people message me on TikTok and stuff, like, hey, did you see this? Yeah, I saw it. And, you know, we've talked about it so many times over the years, it's ridiculous. And it does get old at times for me. Yes, I know I'm the Notorious Banker, but even the Notorious Banker gets tired of banking stuff sometimes. But I'm doing this podcast because I really want to share something personal with you, and it actually has something to do with banking as well. And, you know, there's a lot of other things that kind of come with it. And, of course, you know, as someone who is in the quasi-public eye, I'm not the most famous person in the world, but I do have a significant following. Thank you, Nick Jonas, for that, by the way. You know, I just really want to let you know what's going on with me and what I'm going through. So, you know, when I was in Fort Worth, one of the things I wanted to do was visit Cowboys Stadium. And, you know, I'm a former Dallas Cowboys fan. I'm not a huge, you know, like, this is my team type of guy. You know, the Cowboys were my team when I was a kid. You know, I grew up out of that. I don't like, you know, territorial stuff. You know, college is one thing. But in the pros, you know, everyone gets paid. You know, at the end of the game, if you're 0-16, it doesn't matter, dude, because you still got paid and you're going to go shake hands with your buddy on the other team. You know, that's just life. You know, that's just the way things are. So, you know, I don't have this big allegiance to the Dallas Cowboys, but one of the things I wanted to do while in the Dallas area was to go tour the stadium. And my wife and I headed to Arlington to see AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys, of course. And WrestleMania has been there. Taylor Swift concerts have been there recently. And, you know, I wanted to check it out. And the one reason I wanted to check it out is for my grandfather. My grandfather, Predicando Zamora, 85 years old, was not in a position to, you know, just go to Dallas. He never really was in that position. And, you know, going to Dallas, seeing something that he would have loved to see in his life, always talking about wanting to go with his son who passed 25 years ago to go see a Cowboys game, was something that was always on his wish list. So I wanted to go walk around, walk the stadium, kind of take a million pictures, which I did. You know, I'm not a big picture taker of, you know, concerts or anything anymore, but I wanted to do that just for him. Walked that bad boy, walked about 4 or 5 miles. My feet were hurt. I got blood blisters at the end of my trip to DFW, but I was happy for it. I got to see a lot of things that were really important to me as a lapsed Cowboy fan, and for my grandfather, who was a true Cowboys fan. So I posted all those once I got to the hotel room a couple of Sundays ago. It was actually Sunday the 9th, and I told my aunt, Twinkle is what we call my aunt, hey, show these pictures to Grandpa, because I wanted to show everything. I mean, I was in the Cowboys locker room. I was in the cheerleaders locker room, for God's sakes. It was something that was really, you know, special to me, because I wanted him to get a kick out of seeing stuff that he never would have seen otherwise. And, you know, she showed it to him, and he was happy about it. And I got that reiterated from my grandmother last week as well about the pictures. And I was really excited to do that. And one of the other things that my wife was going to do in the last week was have a work trip to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And on the way to Albuquerque is Socorro, New Mexico, my hometown, where my grandfather lives. So this past Wednesday, which would have been, the 19th, I was going to come back down from the trip to Albuquerque with my wife, go hang out at my grandma's and grandpa's house, and, you know, shoot the shit with them, talk to them about stuff, talk to them about sports, talk to my grandpa about sports, and the news, watch the news, and just interact with them the way that I always love to do. I wish I could do it more, but, you know, just you get older, you become an adult, you have other things you got to take care of. So, you know, we got back from DFW, and, We're sitting at home on Thursday. My mom calls me, tells me that, my grandfather, who has had a hard time walking the last several months or several years for that matter, is not feeling good. He's having a hard time breathing. He's in quote hospice care, but it was the kind of hospice that, you're not gonna die tomorrow type of thing. It's just like, you know what? I just want to make you comfortable type care. And she said that he was having a hard time. They really couldn't help him the way that they needed to help him at home. So he was contemplating going to the hospital to just go get some rest and relaxation and then be back at home, a couple of days from then. So, I said, okay, well, sounds sad, but it sounds good. I just want the best for him. And last Saturday, which was was 16th, the 15th, excuse me, my mom, tells me that, oh yeah, no, his breathing was really bad in the hospital, and they were gonna give him some medication so he could sleep, regulate his breathing and all that. And I had this weird talk with my mom about, this was, towards the end of his life, and got to get your ducks in a row. I worked in banking so many years, and one of the things I wanted to do, was when this happened in my family, was to let people know that yes, there's a lot of stuff that happens when one passes. And I told her, because she's the leader of the family, the de facto leader of the family, that she's gonna have a lot of stops once that journey ends for my grandfather. And going to cancel the satellite, the DirecTV, things like that are just such a pain in the ass, and people aren't prepared for them. Going to the bank is something people aren't prepared for. God, I could tell you 100 stories from, my time at B of A. It was an interesting talk with my mom for an hour. We don't normally talk that long on the phone. She is an instant messenger type now, which is cool because I am as well. And we're just talking about these things. And what's come up in the last month or so was just, I just had this feeling that, my grandfather wasn't going to be here much longer, and I wanted to have the right words to say when it's time to memorialize him, because I thought that that was important. Because I'll be frank with you, a lot of people in my family do not have the confidence, do not have the words, do not have the, when I say mental capability, I don't mean that to denigrate them. I just say that, they're very emotional people, and they're very stoic people and shy people. So I want them to have a mouthpiece, and I guess I am that loud mouthpiece, right? So I was kind of thinking about all the things that, my grandpa is, and, just writing in my head, like, well, when he passes, I want to say this, I want to emphasize this and that. And after I got off the phone with my mom last Saturday, I was going through that again, just, well, yeah, there's a lot of things that I want to say and talk about whenever it does in fact happen. And I think that, everyone has their good moments and everyone has their bad moments. And of course, my grandfather is no different. He's had his share of both. But I want to emphasize the good. I want to emphasize the things that people don't think about. Whenever you're memorializing someone, that's the most important thing in the world to do, right? So after I got off the phone with my mom, just talking to my wife about what we talked about, and just communicating about, my grandparents over the last several weeks, it was important to me to just understand that, this is serious stuff, and we got to talk about it. Well, little did I know that less than 24 hours after that conversation I had with my mom about her being ready to be the leader if and when my grandfather passes, that she needs to take care of a lot of things, and when that happens. Because, life does not stop once the heart stops. There are all these affairs you gotta tie together. It's just hard. So about 1:40 p.m. last Sunday, my grandfather passed away. Perdigondo Zamora, Candy, as he's known, to family, friends, co-workers, everyone in that town passed away at the age of 85, born November 13th, 1937. He lived a modest life. He had, a rough and tumble childhood, teenage years. Got married at an early age, was 20, 21, whenever he met my grandmother. They had their first kid in 1958. Three other kids, including my mother, soon followed. A life of labor and hard work. He worked with a company in my hometown of Socorro, New Mexico, for several years before working at the New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology, formerly known as New Mexico School of Mines, now known as New Mexico Tech University. He was like the lead custodian, you know, landscaping, did some, you know, cut lawns, you know, scrub floors, scrub walls, you know, the things that you don't glamorize typically. But you know what? What's funny is when I worked at B of A, there was a janitor there by the name of Tony. And I got to tell you, he was probably my best friend in 13 years of working at the bank. Because he was just so much fun to talk to. Just had a good outlook on life. And yeah, he had to clean shitty toilets. Yeah, he had to clean sinks where people just threw water everywhere. But he just had a good attitude about it. And that was my grandfather. Although he can be kind of a hard head sometimes, he just liked to laugh and smile and talk. He loved to talk. So when he passed away last Sunday, I didn't cry right away, you know, I was just like trying to figure out what was going on, because my mom called and she was crying, and I stood up and my heart sank, of course, and I just walked around and I didn't know what to do, and my wife was on the couch and I just told her, I was like, he passed, and, you know, we shared a hug, we shared a moment, and just trying to tell my mom that, yes, we're going to be there. We're 150 miles away, but I promise you we will be there in less than 2 hours, because it was important to be around my grandmother, who is having a hard time understanding things. You know, some people would call it Alzheimer's. I don't think we're quite there yet. There's just moments. She is in her mid-80s. But there is some trouble of comprehending things, and I knew that was going to be the most difficult part of the interaction a couple hours later. You know, so you go from getting the call about 2 o'clock that he has passed away to 4 o'clock, not, you know, 2 hours before, you didn't even have that thought necessarily in the front of your brain. And then 2 hours later, having to go into a hospital room where my deceased grandfather was laying in the hospital bed, my grandma was next to them, and my sister, my aunts, and my mom were all in the room, and they're just trying to mill about, trying to get things done, you know, and there's a passed away person there, and it's just hard to comprehend, and it's hard to not think about and cry. But you know, everyone is different, I guess, and you know, I've been emotional about it, but I wasn't emotional at that time because I needed to be the adult male in the room, which I was the oldest male in the room at the time. So of course, you know, the tragedy, you know, befalls my family. My brother gets there, all the rest of the family gets there. And of course, staying the night at hotel, these are unnecessary expenses that show up on credit cards most of the time for people. So of course, I'm cognizant of expenses and stuff whenever I go on impromptu trips. It's just the way that I think. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's an intelligent thing whenever you're having to deal with something like that. So we get a hotel room, you know, spend the night talking to my grandma, crying, mourning, doing all the things that you got to do. And there were a lot of very difficult moments right then and there. And the reason why I wanted to talk about this in the podcast is because there are a lot of things that we can talk about when it comes to the business of passing away. And there were some things just from my perspective. And of course, you know, me being a consumer advocate, being a bank specialist, helping people recover over $4 million in the last 5 years. I don't want to toot my own horn here. You know, you've heard all the bullshit from me for years and years and years. But this is what I do for a living. Customer service is my forte. Customer service is what I loved. Customer service is also what I despise, because I did it for so long. And I can tell when something's real, or when something's a sales goal, or when something is fake. And I'm just going to go over a couple things now. And mind you, of course, in my period of grieving here, I'm just talking out loud. I do not mean to denigrate anyone's professions. I don't mean to denigrate anyone's, you know, ideas or procedures that they have to do, because I understand procedure. I worked at a freaking bank, and trust me, there are procedures up the yin yang there. So, you know, 9 a.m., we're at my grandma's house, and my mom says, you know, we got to go to the bank, because she was trying to pay her cell phone bill, which had disconnected, ironically, the day before. And they always had this, you know, thing where, well, you know, she's on a joint account with my grandfather, and they use this debit card to pay all the bills. So she tries to pay her Metro PCS bill, or Metro by T-Mobile, whatever they call it now. And it denies her to pay the bill. It says you cannot pay the bill at this time. And I didn't know that this had happened. My wife said, hey, did you know that The debit card is closed right now. It must be closed because it's not working. And my mom said that your mom said that it just worked the day before, is what my wife told me. And I'm like, okay. And you know, I've had this conversation with you guys on this podcast before. I've had this conversation with, you know, millions of people. Well, not millions, but thousands of people at Bank of America. When you pass away, the bank gets notified of one's passing, and then there's this whole procedure of reclamation. Whether it's VA benefits, Social Security, disability, whatever, where the government basically says, hey, guess what? This person right over here died, and we know he died or she died. So, this deposit that's coming in next Wednesday, we're going to take it out because this was paid for benefits for the month where this person's no longer here. And of course, your bank needs to be notified. If you have a cell phone, they have to be notified and get a death certificate. So we can remove that person from the account, or we can close the account altogether. The business of dying sucks. The business of dying sucks. It sucks, I know, because I was part of that for a lot of people. And, you know, people don't realize that they need a death certificate for everything to navigate everything. And people say, well, can I just get one and then make a copy of it, you know, for like the cable company or whatever? And I would tell people, no, man, you need 20 of them. You know, the older you are, the more shit you have, the more death certificates you need. It sucks. It sucks. So I say just get as many as you think you need and then add five to that. So, you know, the card isn't working for my mom, so she says go to the bank. And I'm going to First State Bank in Socorro, New Mexico. It's where I had my first savings account. I didn't even have a checking account. My parents or grandparents didn't even know what a checking account was. Until I started working at Bank of America in 2005, if you could believe that. But I had my first account there. I would cash my my bootleg DVD checks and stuff that I would get from eBay in the late 90s over there. It was the first you know, iteration I had with banking. And I walk into this bank and dude, it's so creepy. It's so empty in there. There's like 10 people in this bank and there's one customer. The digitization of banking has met small town America because First State Bank is as small town a bank as you can possibly get. I walk into this place I have not walked into in about 18 years. Go in there, it smells the same. It looks exactly the freaking same. But except there's one big difference. There's one teller and there's five teller booths on a Monday morning, which is one of the busier days, quote unquote, in banking. That's what I was always told. And by teller bay number one is an ATM machine. I'm like, holy crap. This small town bank is pointing people to the ATM, eliminating all the tellers so they can get people used to ATM so they can get rid of that last teller. I was like, it's happening in small town banks too. You gotta be kidding me. And then we go on to go see a personal banker. Who is my first cousin, and you know, you get older. There's things that you like and dislike about people, whether it's family or friends. Her and I don't really get along. It's just, you know, I don't know what it is, and I don't know why. I don't understand it. I've talked about my grandmother's passing on this podcast 4 years ago, and you know, that's probably the last time I saw her. And she's 4 years older now, and. You know, just the interaction with her and her being in her mid-30s and me being in my 40s and being in this creepy bank where it's just so eerie and there's no one in there, there's no one talking, yet there's 15 freaking people there. I started getting anxiety. My heart started pounding, not because my grandpa died. It's because I was getting anxiety being in that goddamn bank and I hated it so much, hated it with a passion. I don't understand how people can work in there. So I sit down, my cousin's there, my mom is talking about it, and she says, I tell my mom, I say, don't tell them grandpa died. Don't tell them grandpa died. It's, you know, it's one of those things where you just say, hey, my card isn't working. You don't give more information. It's like Jeopardy. You know, if you say, what's the capital of New York? And you say, Albany, that's right. But if you say, Albany Town, that's what my grandfather called it. No, it's wrong at that point. Just say what everyone thinks the answer is, and it'll be right. So I told my mom, don't say this right away. And she says, you know, they give us a hug. My cousin gives us a hug, and she heard about what happened. And my mom sits down and goes, well, this debit card isn't working. I'm not able to pay a bill or whatever. And then my cousin says, well, we were notified of your dad's passing. And the Notorious Banker just popped up in my head, when I was there. Because I was that person on the personal banker's desk. I was that person. I heard all the stories, like my brother died in a car accident, or my dad was murdered, or my dad died on the operating table. I had an older customer who died at the dentist while under anesthesia. So, I've heard it all. And usually it's a day or two people get notified. And yeah, there's a procedure that banks have to do. I understand that. But my mom says, well, this card isn't working. And then my cousin says, oh yeah, well, we were notified of his passing. And the first thing I thought was that is a violation of code of ethics, because someone notified the bank of his passing that was within the bank, which you're not supposed to do, a B of A, for instance. So if I found out that, hey, if I saw my next door neighbor dead in the middle of the road, and I worked at a bank, I just can't go to bank records. Was like, okay, well, Mr. Jones died because I saw him, in the middle of the road. So we're notifying Bank of America of his death. You can't do that. Someone has to notify because there's a paper procedure and this and that the B of A does. And I don't know about small town banks, but that really, pissed me off when I heard that. It's like, we were notified of his death. And yes, we have family or cousins that work at that particular bank, but yet still, the code of ethics says that you're not supposed to do this in lieu of, like a family member or a friend telling you of this person's death. This was done supposedly immediately upon opening the bank before we got there. And I just thought that that was a huge code of ethics red flag, because you can block a debit card and that's fine. If it's in my grandfather's name, I understand that totally. But to freeze the card, to freeze it out, and to not, and that's the weird thing about it, is because in a world where my mom is literally the de facto money person in a three-person bank account, they thought that, well, she's going to use this debit card for nefarious purposes, not realizing that that's the only account that she has too. So there's this whole ethical thing that just popped up when we're sitting with my cousin, that I'm like, whether it was my cousin who notified herself of my grandfather's passing, who is not her grandfather, or a cousin or a family friend who works at the bank who notified the bank of his passing, I felt that that was very heavy-handed, because there had not been 20 hours that had yet passed from the time my grandpa passed to the time that that bank opened to be, quote, notified. And I was really upset about that, just from a bank manager perspective, because there is a lot of procedure to be done. And yes, I have been out of the banking game for 5 years, but I can tell you one thing: at Bank of America, as of the day that I got fired, well, the day before, I guess, they did not have instantaneous, oh, this person died. There's no magical system where it just notifies this person is dead, so wipe them all off your records within 24 hours. Someone can notify someone within 24 hours that person's passing, but then there's this whole, okay, well, someone said that he's dead. Well, we need a piece of paper that says he's dead in order to do what we got to do. And that wasn't done, and I was really upset about that. So, my cousin asked me, like, are you still in banking? I'm like, God, no. And then she says, why? And I said, this place ages you, man. It's like dog years. For every year you work here, you're going to age 7 years. I said, I can't stand it. It freaks me out. My heart is pounding. I don't like being in here. And then she talks to my mom. I asked her, does she have a temporary card? And she sounds like she doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about. And she says, no, we're going to order a card for you and you're going to have it here in 2, 3 days or whatever. And, that is that. Barring the conflict of interest part of it being my mom's niece, because that is her actual niece and she is her actual aunt. Barring that conflict of interest thing, that would get you fired at a bigger bank, mind you. The interaction was cordial and it was fine. We got that done. But I walked out of that bank with a bunch of pamphlets and I was really pissed off. The fact that the notification of passing happened while we weren't there, by someone else who was not us. That just there was not a person who was privy to that, because even if they didn't have a paperwork procedure or whatever that says, okay, well, Joe Smith, let us know that this person passed. That did not happen from our side, and I'm really upset about that. As an ethical person, as a person who worked in banking, I just it doesn't gel with me, because the business of dying includes having to pay bills and take care of things. And, you know, there's a gentleman's agreement of like, hey, well, yeah, I understand you got to get things done, but we need these things in order to properly do things like that. But to do that so heavy-handed can totally impact someone, particularly when they're trying to do final expenses. Because guess what? The funeral home is not going to be really happy to go ahead and take care of things for you while they're waiting 6 to 8 weeks or 10 weeks, like Bank of America used to get their shit in a row. That's just the way that it is. So yeah, it was just really difficult. It was just something that I did not like, and I never want to go in there again. But you know, I told my mom, I was like, think about it. There's all those people that are just sitting there. We were the only assholes in there. And there's like 20 employees there. Everyone gets older. Everyone retires from banking. All the customers are really old too, and they pass away just like my grandfather passed away. And I told my mom, I was like, I guarantee you, give it 5 years, this bank will not exist. I say, I guarantee you in 5 years, someone's gonna buy this bank because it creeped me out in there, unlike anything else. And I've seen big banks deteriorate into nothing. And that small bank was 10 times as worse, if you can believe that. I could not believe it. So we take care of some things, and one of the things that we had to do, you know, of course, taking care of my grandmother, was we had to start talking about, you know, final wishes and burial and whatnot. And that had changed relatively quickly after my grandfather passed. He was going to be cremated, now it was going to be a burial. And we head to Daniel's funeral home, which was formerly called Stedman Hall a long time ago. One of my old classmates' dad was the person who ran things, so I kind of understood the process. I had been in there a couple times as a kid. I've seen the rooms where everything is, the memorial services and whatnot. So I understood what's coming next in terms of events. And of course, as a banker, I have been privy to the business of death from customers who came in and let me know what was going on with them and finances and whatnot. But sitting down, talking about the cost of final burial, and there's a lot of things that I've wanted to write about the last few years. I mentioned some of them at the top. I'm writing a New Mexico State book, of course, and then, of course, I'm writing something about, you know, bankruptcy and losing money and the journey to zero, the journey to being just so debt-ridden that you can't recover. And one of the topics I wanted to talk about, and I don't know if it's going to be in that debt book, is GoFundMe. I'm a very anti-GoFundMe person. It is just basically a legitimate racket to ask for handouts, to basically be on the street corner with your palm out asking for free money. They're not going to do a trick. They're not going to send nude pictures. They're not going to, you know, like even homeless people make freaking roses out of leaves and shit, you know, and they ask for $5 or whatever. But this is just like, no, someone died, or we want to go on this band camp trip to some other country. Just give us money, please. And here's a website to just give us money for nothing. I'm a big anti-GoFundMe person, and I know my mom is too. My mom is too proud. She does not want to ask for handouts. She'll be the one that has a bake sale for someone, but she doesn't want a bake sale for her or for my grandfather. So at 1 o'clock, we walk into the funeral home, and boy, I gotta tell you, that was something else. And I want to get to that right after this, so please stick around. Hey everyone, it's James Baca, the Notorious Banker, inviting you to join me on my Substack, thenotoriousbanker.substack.com. It is called The Notorious Banker Consumer Beast. While you know me as a podcaster and bank pundit and consumer advocate on social media, writing is my first passion. I am a published author of several books. I was on Notorious, no pun intended, for my blogging on social media sites such as MySpace in the mid-2000s, which furthered my love of writing, which allowed me to develop a voice and develop confidence in this crazy world that we live in throughout the years. My one promise with Consumer Beast is I'm going to talk about more than just banking. I'm going to talk about things that impact consumers in little subtle ways that slowly but surely impact the way that you spend your money, the way that you do business with certain companies, and the way that you feel about things going on in this crazy world. Consumer Beast is going to be my pet project. I'm going to try to blog at least once a week, hopefully sometimes twice a week. But I urge you to subscribe for free at thenotoriousbanker.substack.com. There will be a paid version of that in the near future, but for now, read my content free of charge, share it with your friends, and hit subscribe on that button, please. That's The Notorious Banker's Consumer Beast Substack at thenotoriousbanker.substack.com. Thank you so much. All right, and we're back with more Notorious Banker. So, the funeral home experience, and, you know, it's one of those things where everything is a sales pitch no matter where you go. I always used to tell my customers, because whenever I used to have to offer a savings account to someone, they just have a check-in and say, well, you know, Mr. Johnson, I know you have, you know, $10,000 in your checking account. You know, it really would behoove you to move some to the savings account. That way you can earn a little bit of interest because it's not accumulating anything in the checking account. And I just want to make sure that you're maximizing what you possibly could with us. You know, that's just part of the sales pitch. That's just part of actually caring about your customer. And that's actually just trying to sell something to someone at all times or whatever. And I always used to tell my customers who used to have pushbacks, like, well, why do you always want to offer me this for? What, you know, what's your problem? You know, I say, you know, sir, it's part of what I have to do. Part of my job is to recommend things. And recommendations, yes, I do have a sales goal. I do have a sales quota. It's not about that. The fact of the matter is you are making $0 and 0 cents on your $10,000 in your checking account. Well, if you put in your savings account, you know, if you put half of that in there, well, you know, you might earn $50 of interest, especially now with the higher interest rates. But 50 is better than zero, and you could always move the money instantly to your checking account if you do need it. It's just a matter of just trying to do what's best for you. So we all have sales goals and quotas, and when I would get pushback like that, excuse me, I would just tell people, like, you know, have you ever been to Wendy's or have you ever been to Sonic and, you know, someone asks you, would you like fries with that? You know, that's one of those things that we always joke about anytime, you know, we talk about working in the service industry or fast food industry. And would you like fries with that is more meaningful than what you think, my friends, okay? So, you know, if someone says, nah, I don't want any fries with that, they're not asking for your health. They were trained to cross-sell, too. They might be 15 years old, full of pimples, working at McDonald's. But they are training those people to cross-sell. Because guess what? If someone just wants a dollar McChicken, and I know they're $3 now, but they used to be a dollar when I was a kid. Get a dollar McChicken, and someone say, well, would you like some fries with that? That's not them being courteous. That's because some manager said, you know what? When they don't ask for fries, you offer fries. And maybe that's a sale. Because guess what? This bunch of fries costs us 28 cents and you can sell them for $1.99. That's how you make millions of dollars in this world, my friends. Okay, that's how you do it. So I always used to tell my customers, like, you know what? Whenever someone says, would you like fries with that? Or, you know, they'll ask you for something just ridiculous. Like, can I have some cheese sticks at Sonic? And they'll say, well, would you like an ice cream cone? Like, people are like, what? What the hell is that? But it's because some manager told him, offer ice cream cones. And if someone says, oh, yeah, I guess I'll take one. What the hell, you know? I always used to tell my customers, there's some piece of paper or there's some manager documenting that that little Joey over there is cross-selling, you know, ice cream cones with mozzarella sticks. And he's actually getting a lot of customers to do that. That dude's going to be management material, man. He just has the confidence to run this place because he's making us thousands of dollars more every single month. That's just the way people think. That's just the way sales goals think. You know, sales goals are working at a bank, a big heartless corporation. There's sales goals, and it's just, you know, this is your goal. It's a fucking 100 accounts, and you're like, whoa, okay. and you just got to deal with it. You know, they don't care how you do it. You just got to get it done. So this funeral home, Daniel's Funeral Home, is a part of a bigger corporation that was emphasized many times in a conversation with the person who was helping us kind of plan my grandfather's services. And, I won't name him. He was a really, really nice guy. I have nothing bad to say about him. You know, there's a sales element to everything, as I mentioned, and being a salesperson is not a fun gig. I can tell you that I am one of the best salespeople ever in banking, but that doesn't mean I'm proud of that. I'll say it, but I hate it, you know, but it's okay to be proud of it because it is a skill, okay? Some people hit a 3-point shot. Some people can hit a 500-foot home run. Some people can parallel park, and some people can sell. And they put people in those positions because they're wanting to cross-sell. But, you know, I had never been actively involved in the costing out process of a funeral for a family member. Now, I had a niece pass away a couple of years ago. I had my grandmother pass away 4 years ago, but I was not close to that side of the family, nor was I one entrusted in her finances when she passed in 2019. My other grandfather passed away the first year I was in banking in 06, and I had an uncle pass away in 1997. I was 14 years old. I have been unlucky or lucky, whatever you want to call it, when it comes to people passing away, because I have not had a lot of experience with it personally. But at the same time, that means that I've had a lot of people that I love in my life for a very long time, and I'm 40 years old now. So this is the first time I sat down at a table and said, well, let's discuss what we're going to do with Grandpa, with Dad, as you know, my mom would say. And, you know, sitting there in a room where there's models of coffins, caskets, whatever you want to call them. You know, I call them caskets because of WWE. You see them and you're just like, man, there's just so many of them. And it's, you know, people don't realize everything is aesthetically done for a reason. It's the same reason that they have Smirnoff vodka on the bottom shelf at the bar and they have Ciroc vodka a couple of rows up. And they got, you know, Ace of Spades, $400 a bottle on the top shelf because that's why they call it top shelf liquor because it's on top. Well, everything is strategically, you know, planned in this room where the most expensive coffins slash caskets are literally right behind us in this little meeting table that they had. And I knew that my mom would not get any of those because it's not what she does. And I know I could hear my grandpa already talking about cost, you know, from beyond the grave already. And I just know to immediately go down to the end of the row. And that's where everyone instinctively goes as well. And of course, even the low-end caskets are like $2,000 for like something that's decent looking. Something that'll at least be a... Man, what they do? That they just get a cardboard box, you know? And it's morbid, I know. It's morbid to talk about. But seeing the cost of those things, and it's like... You know, you go to buy a car at the car dealership, and it's just not buying a car. It's like, does it come with keys? Yeah. Did you want the undercoating on this car? I'm like, shit, man, I just want to drive a car. And it's like, okay, well, this casket's good. And then, it's, you know, do you want a guest book, a funeral sign-in sheet guest book thing? $200. It's $200 for a leather-bound book. I bought it for $21 later that night. It's $200. And then, you know, they're talking about the memorial cards, you know, the little prayer cards if you're Catholic, or the little memorial service things. It's a little, you know, folded book where it has the person's picture on the front usually, or Jesus or whatever. Has the person's name, you know, the date of the services, pallbearers, honorary pallbearers, the pastor, the priest, whatever. Has all that there. $100+ for 100 of them. Now, I understand that one, and I'm like, well, holy shit, that's a lot of money, okay? That's a lot of freaking money for paper. Paper that people, most people will take, and they'll look at it once, and they're not going to save, they're not going to laminate or whatever, and you're just like, well, this is just an unnecessary cost, you know? And you're just like, wow, what's going on here, you know? Like, why do I have to buy all this stuff? So... I told my mom, I was like, we can do that. We got printers. We got things we got to do. And my sister-in-law printed some out. And they came out great, you know. I'm not saying that they came out perfect, but they were fine, you know. They'll do, you know. The people that surrounded my grandfather don't necessarily have the greatest taste in the world, so anything is going to be a positive for them. So they were fine. But yesterday, I was kind of just dealing with some grieving and stuff. I'm gonna start whipping around Canva. I have a Canva account for my social media that I haven't done in the last few months because I've been writing this book, and I just whipped up some things. My grandfather liked a few things. He loved to gamble. Who doesn't love to gamble? He loved the New Mexico Lobos. Boo. The UNM Lobos, the hated rival of my New Mexico State Aggies. Huge Lobo fan. And he loved the Dallas Cowboys. Why I went to AT&T Stadium a week before he died. I got cherry and silver. The color, the hex colors, color code on Canva. And then I got the Dallas Cowboys royal blue color that they use on some of their color schemes. And I made memorial cards. Yeah, it's kind of light on the Jesus, light on the crosses, and the priest name and stuff like that. Has a picture of my grandpa, the way that we remember him the best. Has the Lobos logo, Dallas Cowboys logo, totally violating copyrights, by the way. Go ahead and sue me. And Walmart printed them out, so they don't care either. And it's a 4x6. It is a photo. It is a photo print. But it's a card that someone's going to see, and it's going to catch the eye and say, hey, it's cherry and silver, like the UNM Lobos. Or it's royal blue and silver, like the Dallas Cowboys. And it says, celebrating the life of Pretty Condo Candy Zamora, and then it has his date of birth and passing. Celebrating the life of beloved husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather. And it has the dates of his services. And the updated card has the pallbearers, which includes me, which I will be a pallbearer on Thursday morning. Dude, it costs 12 cents. I'm going to make 100 of them, and it's going to cost $12. 100 of them over there would have cost $100, and it would have been filled with a lot of platitudes. And I don't know how else to say without being an a-hole, but, you know, the servant is going home, and, dude, I'm not religious. I'm not. And if you listen to me and you're like, God, this guy's horrible because he's not religious, well, it's fine. I don't care. I've had 40 years of life, and I made a decision that I just don't understand it, and it's fine. If you understand and want to believe it, by all means, believe it. But my grandfather would not want a bunch of cards that just say all these things. He would say that he want to because that's how he was raised. But, dude, the cherry and silver with the Lobo logo and a picture of him wearing a University of Mexico shirt and a Lobos hat, obviously picked out for on purpose. people say that young individuals, you know, who like the shoes have got to match, the pants have got to match, whatever. No, dude, my 85-year-old grandpa has a Lobo hat on with a New Mexico sweater on. For God's sakes, he was matching. He knew what was up and he knew what he wanted at that moment. This Lobo card he would love and he'd get a kick out of it. I found some interesting kind of templates for the University of New Mexico basketball jerseys that were blank. I was able to throw his nickname and his number. I just put his birth year as his number on the back of the jersey, and I'm going to create a 8x10 of that for the service. And Dallas Cowboy jersey, NFL.com, you are a lifesaver. You can spend $200 on a custom jersey, or you can enter in a nickname and a number on a template, and they'll give you what it looked like, because guess what, it wants to cross sell you a jersey. And I just downloaded the picture that it gave me, and I used that for the purposes of this ceremony, and that was free 99, my friends. So I'm going to spend $12 on 100 prints, and I probably will need to make 100 more because people are going to like them so much, because they're quintessentially my grandfather. And we would have spent 10 times as much on those cards. And we just couldn't do it. And, you know, the person who was offering these things, his job is to do all this stuff. Okay, this is what he is entrusted to do. And I don't know his background. I don't know where he's from. And it's fine. I don't need to know the life of a funeral arranger, except for that's his job. He was very steadfast about mentioning that, you know, everything has to be paid in full right away because it's a giant corporation, blah, 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 blah. You know, these are things that I said at Bank of America for 15 years. It's like, well, it's the second biggest bank in the world. And, like, it's easy to kind of blame Big Brother on stuff like that. As a customer service person, I take ownership of stuff. So if there's something that got messed up, even if it was by Bank of America as a whole, guess what? To me, I'm Bank of America to that customer. So if they got something royally done to them, they got just totally screwed and hosed on something, say, you know what? On behalf of my company, I apologize, and let's just try to make this right. So, you know, the person helping us there, you know, of course, it's kept on, you know, mentioned a few times that, you know, this is a big corporation. It's not, and it's like, I understand that, you know, because what I also understand about a big corporation is like, hey, would you like to spend $100 on paper? Yeah, we have the $2,999 coffins at the end of the room right there. This one here, man, it's just shining. It has Dallas Cowboy colors. And it's only $8,900. You know, I'm just making that up, but I'm just saying, like there's a tier system for that. And then, of course, because Socorro, New Mexico is basically 70% Roman Catholic, they sell these gold crucifixes, these, like, gold-plated things that, I mean, if you're fighting a hardcore match in pro wrestling, you would use one of these things to injure your opponent. And they're $25 each. And my mom, being the lapsed Catholic that she is, but still, you know, even though she's an armchair Catholic, wanting to placate her family and friends, yeah, I'll take five of them. It was like $125. I didn't even spend that much on groceries last month. And then you're like, well, we gotta embalm, you know, the deceased. And the person who does that isn't here, so we gotta take him to Albuquerque. And in my head, I'm just thinking of the longest Uber ride in the world. I'm like, is this gonna cost $500? Because the costing of a funeral started to remind me suspiciously of going to Vegas. Or everything is a fee, or checking into an airline. It's like, you want to see out the window? Well, it's a $10 fee for a window seat. Nah, screw that. I don't want to be near the window. I don't like the window. I just want to be in the aisle. Well, you know, there's a $5 upgrade to the aisle seat. Well, what if I sit in the middle? Well, you can't sit in the middle unless this other one is full, because we got to make sure that the rows are even. Like, dude, just tell me you want my money and just let me sit wherever I want. And that's the way it kind of felt. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like, well, this is $100, and then this here, and then we gotta, you know, embalm, and then we gotta make sure that we have the viewing, and then, oh yeah, the plot. It's $1,000 for the plot, a plot that we thought that my grandfather had purchased, but apparently not. And, you know, the Catholic Church, one of the biggest landowners in the world, wants $1,000 more. So you're like, okay, well, we gotta do that, because he wants to be buried next to his son. And it's in this old cemetery where, you know, I don't want to bore you with the details because a lot of people don't like talking about cemeteries, but it's an old cemetery. Dude, there's people that died there 100 years ago. And this is a bad analogy, but you ever go on a really old interstate and you're like, man, that exit just merges into traffic. I was going to Dallas and it was like that. It's like, all of a sudden, this road just merged into the interstate. You're like, holy shit, there's no gradual thing. Like, people could easily die there. And you're just like, no one knew how to plan this back in the day. And, of course, now in 2023, interstates, you have flyovers. You have these 100-foot-high roads that just whip you around to the other interstate. And you just merge perfectly. You don't have to worry about wrecking and all that stuff. Like, I mean, it's just amazing how much things have changed with that. But the cemetery is the total opposite of that. It's just like, yeah, it's just people just got buried wherever they wanted to get buried. There was no rhyme or reason to it. And with my uncle dying 27 years ago, he's right in the middle. So you just can't just break out a backhoe and just dig a hole there. Because, like, hell, my father-in-law has a backhoe. He can take care of these things. That's what he does for a living, too. And he can, you know, dig a hole. But it's like, oh, no, well, we can't get equipment in there. So now we got to pay someone to dig a hole. And, we know a person who can dig a hole. And I knew people who dug holes back in my hometown of Socorro, New Mexico, 15 years ago. And they're all people that were indirectly related or related to my stepfather. And guess what? Those people are still there and they're digging the hole, for God's sakes. Amazing. I know. It's just it's just weird. And then, of course, in order to bury, it's like, well, yeah, like, well, we've got to prep the hole, and you need the lowering device, the little springy thing that lowers the casket in there, and that's like $700. And you're like, dude, it is like an airline. It's just like aisle seat, and then baggage fee, And then there's all, you know, early check-in $10, late check-out $5. I made that up. But, you know, just there's all these things, and you're like, holy crap. And it just kept on just seeing the old adding machine in my head. Just like you hit numbers, and you pull that lever thing, and you go to the next thing. I'm just like, man, it just never stops. It's like Vegas. It's like, oh, you want a room with the view of the fake Eiffel Tower at the Paris Casino? What's an extra $30? Oh, the Bellagio Fountains? Well, that's $50. That's a little bit more. Oh, you want both? What's $75? We give you a discount on that. And then I was like, no, I'm good. And someone once asked me, he's like, oh, would you like a strip view upgrade for $15? And I wrote 2 books about Vegas. I've talked about Vegas a lot over the course of my life. And I told the check-in clerk one of the last times I was there, I was like, I have been to Vegas 34 times. A view of the air conditioning is fine. And it was fine for me, because it's just all these nickel and diming things. And even the rooms in Vegas, you know, they have the refrigerators that have the mini bar with a $9 bottle of Fiji water, a $7 can of Coca-Cola, a Reese's cup that's probably been there for a year that's only $12. They have a little lovemaking kit with oils and lubes and whatnot, $45. And once you pick them up from the mini bar, it's all weight sensor. So once you pick it up, after 30 seconds, it charges it to the room. You may just be the blindest asshole in the world looking for your glasses. And you're like, nah, I don't want this. And then by the time you put it back, you already got charged for it. They do that because people are stupid and because they want to just kind of milk every last dollar from you. Because like a low roller like me is not going to lose at the craps tables. A low roller like me is going to say, man, I want eggs for my breakfast. Well, one egg is $4.50 and 2 eggs is $5.95. And you go, wow, like I planned for X amount of dollars and now it's this amount of dollars. So seeing all the costs and knowing that it was going to be 5 figures and knowing what my mom had or what she expected to have and what she wanted, I got into this heavy couponing mode, which I'm continuing at as of this moment, to where I want to take care of food, logistics, flowers, and so many things, because I was like, she can't afford that. And my family can't afford that because, hell, that's a year's salary, you know, with SSI and stuff like that. So, you know, it put into perspective a lot of things. I want to get to one other thing about the whole mourning process as well, because I told you about the 12-cent memorial cards and my couponing and whatnot. Like I said, I don't denigrate anyone's job, you know, because that person is supposed to, they have training to understand when people are too emotional and make financial decisions, but their job is also to sell stuff too, which is fine. I was trained that way. I trained people that way. I understand that. But cross sells are a MF-er, if you know what I mean. You know, like, it's like, well, you know, we want the basic B word casket. I don't want to say the B word right now. The basic B word casket and 6 crosses, and we're going to pass on the prayer cards. And they have like these things where you can get someone's thumbprint on there. It's to stay fair. It's like, you know, get your girlfriend's lock of hair in a necklace, you know, like you're like, damn, they thought of everything. And it just blew my mind, all the upsells and cross sells. Now, like I said, that person did not create that stuff, the funeral arranger. He's just a person that's offering it because that's part of his job or whatever. But I know inevitably in any line of work, there's a piece of paper. It's like, well, this person wanted a tier 2 coffin and they wanted, you know, they wanted this. And well, the embalming is coming with this and they wanted this type of burial and the service here and this and that. So you can kind of price things out the same way a car dealer can price things out, the same way a home loan specialist, like I was at Bank of America, can plot things out and you get to this price. But I immediately think of that person's supervisor, and I don't know this person's supervisor, and I don't care to know this person's supervisor, but normally there's a supervisor out there somewhere that's like, well, got that Zamora patient in there. Why did they only go with the tier 1 coffin? Why not the tier 2? Why couldn't, you know, offer them a little bit of ivory in that coffin? Nah, they were on a budget. Well, they were on a budget, yet they asked for 6 crucifixes. So that's interesting. You know, you could have probably pushed them a little bit more into thinking about the prayer cards or about the thumbprint necklace thing. You know, we really want to maximize what we got here because we were a little bit short in our necklace thumbprint things last quarter, and we really want to pick that up. So there was a lot of missed opportunities here with Zamora. You know, we regret to say that. You know, we're here for our customers, but at the same time, there's a bottom line here. And, you know, we have a goal of, you know, 8 products for every customer. And, of course, burial is a natural one. The coffin's a natural one. But, you know, all the things, you got to emphasize that when people go to funerals, they want to have a piece of paper to know who they're mourning. They want to have a piece of paper and know who the pallbearers are, and they want to be able to point them out to their family. So you need to sell them that, and you need to sell them on the crucifixes. You know what? Everyone's a Catholic here. Everyone believes in Jesus. Everyone needs one of those things. And you can personalize and say, hey, you can have this little bronze Jesus here, and it's going to be a memory of your uncle or your grandpa or your mom or whatever. And they're going to remember it. They're going to put a piece of tape on it saying this was my great-grandma's crucifix on March 10th, 1989, and they're going to go back and they're going to remember good things about their great-grandmother. That's how salespeople are. That's how the bosses of salespeople are. It's not a, okay, well, let's do what's best for our customer. It's just like, hey, well, why'd they only get 6 crucifixes, man? What the hell's going on? Why did they not get a thumbprint on a necklace? Why did they not get a $200 leather-bound book that I literally got for $21, and that's just because I didn't have another week to get it? It's just a piece of leather with nothing else on it. It doesn't even have the person's name inscribed on it. I'm sure that can be done or whatever. It has a window hole for a picture and a bunch of sign-in sheets like you're signing into a state park or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's $20. It's not a lot of money for me, and I'm broke. But $200, yeah, that's a lot. That's premium prices there. And, you know, just to wrap it up, just having that conversation about crucifixes and thumbprints and all these little things that just add up, man. I'm just like, wow. It just blows my mind. And one of the things that really blew my mind was the obituary, because I was tasked to writing the obituary for my grandfather, which I did. And I'm going to read it at the end of this podcast here. And, you know, you submit it to the funeral home, and they're gracious enough to put it on their website. I don't know if it's there in perpetuity or if it's going to come down next Thursday, but I submitted it, and, of course, I sent it to the guy, and he sent me an email which basically said, well, let me send it over to the newspaper so they can give you a quote on how much it's going to cost in the newspaper. And one of the biggest parts of his sales conversation was more about the, you know, things are a lot different in a small town because you can do X, Y, Z, whatever. And I agree with that. I do not disagree with that. Yeah, you know, there's certain things. I remember during COVID times, the Boston Globe, where I have a lot of friends. I had a lot of friends who worked in Boston Globe, Washington Post, New York Times. They were having these conversations with me because they knew what I did for a living. And it's like, man, we can't. It just blows our mind that our, you know, first 30 pages are obituaries of COVID deaths. And everyone is paying for that. So basically, it's like a giant death yearbook. And in a place like the Boston Globe, New York Times, whatever, it costs thousands of dollars to put your obituary in there. And you're like, holy crap, that is a lot of effing money. That is a lot of effing money. And I was just like, damn, that's true, you know. And these people are like, I don't feel right, you know, that these people pay money and they died. And of course, their family wants to memorialize them. But, you know, there's like hundreds of these people in this paper. And I'm like, I understand. Yeah, it's crazy. So I send the obituary to the guy. And, you know, he's cool about it. He's like, well, thank you for it. And then, you know, part of his job is to submit it to the local newspaper. And one of the things that he told us in the conversation, and I don't know if it's a flaw on his end. I don't know, you know, if it's just one of those things where it's just easier to say, and maybe I'm the first person ever to question it or whatever. But he went into this spiel about, oh, you know, in Albuquerque, they charge by the line over there, or they charge by the word. I don't know. I forget how he said it. But, you know, they charge by the, in a big town, it costs this much because this and that. And the big town in New Mexico is the Albuquerque Journal, you know, the biggest paper in the state. And that's saying nothing because all newspapers are dying. So he's like, oh yeah, no, it should be a lot cheaper to get this, you know, into the paper. And I'm long-winded. I write a long obituary. What can I say? That's just who I am. That, you know, and especially when it's someone close to you, of course, you're going to be talking about them a hell of a lot more. So I write the obituary, and it's good. It's up on the website immediately. And, you know, things are cool with that. I'm fine. Part of his job is to send it to the newspaper. This is part of the routine there. And, you know, it's just, oh, it's cheaper in a small town because, you know, in another paper, they charge by the word or the line or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I get the order confirmation for the obituary. And then the Aldefensor Chieftain is and always has been literally like a middle school newspaper. Like, it, don't get me wrong, they've had some good journalists over the years, and I've been fortunate enough to do some editorials when I was younger in there. So I'm not going to denigrate the quality of it. It's just that it's like 4 pages and half of it's advertising, you know what I mean? It's just basically just a giant billboard. So, you know, most people don't know that obituaries cost. They don't. That's how stupid people are. I knew that they were going to cost because I've had this conversation a million times. $162.65 for a circulation of, I don't know, let's just say maybe 1,000 newspapers. And you're like, damn, $162. I don't think my grandpa would like that. He wants to be remembered, but $162. And then they said the ad size, it says 1 by 107 lines. Like I said, I'm a wordy son of a bitch. But I was like, 107 lines? That does not sound right, even for wordy James, because I'm an author. I have written 8 books. I am writing 3 more. I know how many pages are in a, you know, how many words, excuse me, are in the 200-page book with 10-point Times New Roman font. I know how many lines, I know how many paragraphs, I know how many words, how many characters. I'm like, 107 lines? I'm like, goddamn, I love my grandpa, but 107 lines, that just sounds right. And then it says color obituary picture. I was like, well, they're trying to cross-sell an obituary picture. And I'm like, are you serious, dude? Like, color picture, this isn't JFK, it's my grandfather. My grandfather would think you're crazy. And so I scroll down, and I see my obituary here. And obituaries are typically, they look kind of like classified ads, especially in that newspaper. But, dude, they probably milked. And the way that the paper is laid out, they probably milked 30 to 40 lines. And if it's 30 to 40 lines out of 107, it's $160. They probably milked another $50 out of this obituary. Because they literally hyphenate words like eternal, marrying, daughters, workers. It's literally work-ers, community-t, and basketball. So, yeah, no basketball. It's basketball. Great-grandchildren's all in one line, yet arrived is not. And, you know, it's crazy. There's dashes, like, every third line. And I'm like, they really milked this. If they formatted a newspaper right, and they put it all in 10-point font, and even if they made a little box, like they were advertising a grocery store or something like that, it would be 20 lines tops. Because it is 5 paragraphs. One, two, three, four. Yeah, 5 paragraphs. 5 paragraphs. Yet they somehow made it 20 lines per paragraph. It's just weird. And I want to show this to the world. There's a lot of family names and personal stuff on there. So I don't want to share it just yet. Maybe I'll figure out how to do that. But, you know, I saw that. And I'm like, man, what a money grab. $167 for this. And this is why newspapers are dying. We're contributing to a company that's probably not going to be there in a couple of years. And one of the things that, you know, the gentleman said was, oh, you know, in a big town, it's different. Well, it says Albuquerque Journal on the invoice, you know, and I don't know who owns what anymore. I know that Gannett owns our local paper here in Las Cruces, and the El Paso Times too, and the Arizona Republic. So it's all basically like five or six companies that own the whole country. So it doesn't matter if like, well, if you can't say, well, like, oh, in a bigger town, this and that. It's like saying, well, if Bank of America bought that little ass bank I was in last Monday, you can't say, oh, well, in another town, Bank of America does it. It's like, no, it is that. It is that. And it's just like, man, I don't know what to say. So seeing this and seeing the whole cost of everything, guys, I understand why people do GoFundMes now. And don't get me wrong, I still despise GoFundMes because financial planning is important to me as a banker, as a financial specialist. I want people to be cognizant of the things that cost them a lot of money over the course of a lifetime and in death. And just seeing the final, just, it's like the last day in Vegas. They're just trying to get every last cent from you. And I know that the guy who was offering these things to us is, you know, he's paid a salary. I'm sure he has bonuses and commissions based on things. I understand that. I don't care. I had that too. I'm fine. But it's just, you know, I see this 107 lines for something that's really not a lot. And I'm like, I have to question how we got to $162, how they made five paragraphs that expensive. It's just impossible. It's impossible in the newspaper world. It just makes it sound like, you know, like it's like Pawn Stars. It's like, well, hey, what do you want for that 13-inch TV? Yeah, $105,000. But we can meet in the middle at $75. You know, like, damn. I understand that you need to make money too. You got to eat too. But there's like a lot of things wrong when they can't even spell my aunt's name, Annette, in one line. It's un-net. And you're like, damn, this sucks. This sucks. Anyway, I want to wrap it up. I just want to say I understand why people do GoFundMes now. I still want to talk about this, especially vis-a-vis this interaction I've had in the last week, and of course, thinking about my grandfather, thinking about the things that he went through in the last years of his life, the seeing him 3 weeks ago before he passed, and going to the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, you know, 10 days before he left us. Actually, you know, what am I saying? A week before he left us, it meant a lot to me, and I don't pray, but I was glad to have had him around while I went to the Dallas Cowboys Stadium because I wanted him to see that pictures. Because I'll be frank with you, I want to go to a Billy Joel concert in Dallas. I could have cared less about touring that stadium. I just wanted him to see some cool pictures, and I'm glad that he did. And I thank my aunt for that. Totally. But I want to wrap it up. It's been a long podcast. I thought I was going to go 30 minutes. I went twice that. But there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about. I'm going to fill you in on some of the particulars because I do have services on Wednesday and Thursday, and I just feel that monetarily there's a lot of things that are probably going to be talked about because I'm going to have a direct interaction with the finances of this because my mom is going to be asking me for advice. And I want to share any insight that I have into the cost of passing away that I could share to you, my listeners and my fans who follow me on my social media channels. But, you know, my mom has told me and my wife a million times that he was proud of us, and you know, I'm proud of him too. He lived 85 years. He lived a hell of a life. And he had some kids, some great kids. He has great grandkids, myself included, and great grandkids as well. Let me say that again. He has great, meaning awesome, grandchildren, comma, and he has awesome great grandchildren. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just like babbling at this point, but he has great grandchildren and he has great great grandchildren, and he has great, great, great grandchild. Okay, well, I'm talking too much, but anyway. To my grandfather, Pretty Condo Zamora, known affectionately as Candy, the same way I'm known affectionately as Notorious Banker. He was a good man. I got to know him a lot more in the second half of my life than the first half because he was always this strong, stoic type who worked hard all the time. Fall asleep by 7 o'clock, wake up at 2 in the morning, almost never saw him, to the point in retirement where he became a great grandfather with a hyphen and got to see us turn into adults and talk casino and talk sports and talk all these things. was really important to me, and I'm really gonna miss him a lot. And I know my grandmother is devastated, and the one thing that the past week has taught me is we're resolute, man. We came together pretty good, and I don't know what switch flipped in me, but a switch did flip, and I am committing to making sure that my grandmother lives the rest of her life comfortably, and anything that I can do, which included a lot of heavy duty yard cleaning, the day after he passed, well, 2 days after he passed, I'm gonna do it and I'm gonna be there. It's 150 miles, but I'm gonna go visit as much as I can. I'm gonna scam as many groceries as I can. I'm gonna do so much to help her out and to help my family out because you know what? My grandfather wasn't one to go to the stores and do things. He couldn't do a lot of that in his later life, but he was the supportive person and someone who is gonna be sorely missed by that family, and I'm gonna miss him too. So I thank you for listening to the Notorious Banker podcast. You can find me on my social media channels at Notorious Banker on TikTok, Threads, Instagram, and of course on Twitter. So I'm going to leave you, and I'll be back shortly with another podcast. Maybe I'll talk more about this situation, but I'm going to leave you with an obituary for my grandfather. And I know if you've listened to me for an hour, you can listen for another minute, my friends, because you're going to learn a little bit about yours truly with my obituary, because these are my words. So, Grandpa, I miss you. I love you. I hope you are at peace and you're not hurting anymore. I'm thankful for that. And we're gonna celebrate the hell out of your life in a few days. Trust me, I am working hard. I'm tired. It's 1:17 in the morning as I record this, and I'm gonna continue to work on your behalf. Predicando Candy Zamora, 1937 to 2023. Predicando Candy Zamora entered eternal rest on July 16, 2023, at the age of 85. Born November 13, 1937, in Socorro, New Mexico, to Juan and Florinda Zamora. Predicando was a lifelong resident of Socorro, marrying his wife Cecilia in 1958. Their son Delbert was also born in 1958. Three daughters soon followed. Kathy, that's my mom, was born in 1961, Annette, Nettie, in 1963, and their youngest Blajeres, Twinkle, born in 1970. Candy worked for decades at New Mexico Tech, beautifying the university for its students, faculty, and workers, and made hundreds of friends and acquaintances in that time. In his spare time, Candy would provide landscaping services to members of the community as well. His hard work for his community, his workplace, and his family will be forever remembered and cherished. Candy was a lifelong fan of the Dallas Cowboys, UNM Lobos, and the game of basketball. Whether it was a day trip to the casino, or sitting on the couch watching the news or the TV shows or movies of his youth, he enjoyed every moment of the day. As grandchildren and great-grandchildren arrived in his later years, he would spend some of those moments joking and laughing with them. He was the loving patriarch of his large family. Candy is preceded in death by his son Delbert, brothers Steve, Paul, David, and Benny Zamora, sisters Dorothy Gallegos, Rosella Maldonado, and Sophie Rosas, and two great-granddaughters, my beautiful nieces Briella and Aria Baca. He is survived by his wife of 65 years, Cecilia Zamora, sisters Maria, Crucita Collins, Jenny Ruiz, three daughters, excuse me, Kathy Baca, and husband Lupe Soto, Annette Nettie Herrera, and Plajeres Twinkle Zamora, and partner Elizabeth Ware. Grandchildren Crystal Terrazas, Ramon Terrazas Jr., and wife Deanna Terrazas, Erica Gonzalez and Tommy Gonzalez, James Baca and wife Gabrielle Martinez, hey, that's me, Aaron Baca and wife Alicia Hill Baca and Vanessa Hinojosa. 13 great-grandchildren, Aliyah Emiliano, Kai, Ramon III, Zariah, Madison McKenzie, Dominic Jr., Manuel, Kylie, Avani, Santana, Isabel, and one great-great-grandchild, Daya. Viewing will be held at Daniel's Funeral Home at 5 to 7 on Wednesday, July 26, 2023, with rosary and funeral services being held at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday, July 27th at San Miguel Church in Socorro, New Mexico. Burial will subsequently follow at San Miguel Cemetery. Written millions of words in my life, my friend, and that was the first time I had to write an obituary officially, and it was for my grandfather, and I hope I did him justice with that. So guys, thank you once again for listening to my podcast. I appreciate it. We will talk to you very soon. And rest in peace to my awesome grandfather, Candy Zamora. You have a good day, everyone.